Good afternoon. We will call the Legislative Coordinating Commission to order. Today is March 26th, 2019, and we have a fairly lengthy agenda, so we will try to move through in an efficient manner. The first item on the agenda is approval of minutes from the April 30th, 2018 meeting. We have a motion to approve those minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Next on the agenda is the approval of the resolutions establishing the subcommittees, and Mr. Hubinger is going to go through those for us. Mr. Hubinger, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. This item of the agenda would reestablish a number of subcommittees of the LCC. The first one, LCC-1, would reestablish the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. As you know, this subcommittee reviews and provides interim approval of labor contracts between the state and its employees. The structure is the same as has been adopted in the last several biennia. Following protocol, the chair rotates from the House to the Senate for this next two-year period. Otherwise, the resolution is the same.
Okay, members, do we have a motion to establish the LCC Subcommittee on Employee Relations?
I have a motion.
Okay, Speaker Hortman.
My question would be, did we change the chairmanship to be a two-year term in statute, or is that in practices and procedures of the committee?
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hortman, that's just been the process, procedure of the LCC in establishing the subcommittee.
And it's an every,
Speaker
Mr. Chair,
Hortman?
It's an every two-year cycle, not an every year.
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct.
And is that pursuant to practices and procedures of the LCC, or is that pursuant to statute?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's pursuant to LCC procedures.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Well, Senator Dames moves that we adopt the LCC Subcommittee on Employee Relations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, members, the second resolution would reestablish the Subcommittee on Administrative Rules. This is a placeholder subcommittee that deals with administrative rules review on behalf of the LCC, which has statutory responsibility for this area of law. This subcommittee has not met for several years. It has been reestablished by the subcommittee, so it's available if leadership wants to use it. In the 2017 session, there was discussion by many members about using this subcommittee to review the administrative rule of the PCA on dealing with wild rice. They ended up resolving that elsewhere, so the subcommittee was not needed. Adopting this resolution establishes the structure. The leadership would still need to appoint the members. There's no cost involved.
Members, any discussion on establishing the LCC Subcommittee on Administrative Rules? Seeing none, do we have a motion? Senator Bach moves that we approve the resolution, LCC Subcommittee on Administrative Rules. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, members, the third resolution would reestablish the Subcommittee on Ethnic Councils. This subcommittee of four members absorbs the responsibility of the LCC with respect to the three state ethnic councils that underwent some reform in the 2015 session in order to improve relationships with the legislature. The new law provides for the LCC to appoint the directors of those three councils, and this subcommittee carries out that responsibility.
Any discussion on the resolution to approve the Subcommittee on Ethnic Councils? Senator Pappas. Senator Pappas moves the resolution. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Next item on the agenda is the 2017 financial audit. We have the deputy director and managing partner coming forward. Welcome, both of you. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Miller. My name is Diane Henry Wangenstein. I'm the Deputy Director with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. In a moment, Steve McDonald will speak and introduce himself, but he's also the managing partner of the Abdu Ackman Meyer, the audit firm that we selected. The LCC does an audit every 2 years. We issue an RFP. This is for fiscal year 17. We selected Abdu Ackman Meyer from our RFP. Although this is done from fiscal year 17, this was the first opportunity to present this audit, this financial statements to the LCC. I'd also like to recognize the work of our fiscal service office, the staff there, Denise Jobe and Anna Shaw, and working on this audit and all the preparation efforts as well. And I'll leave it to Steve then.
All right, Mr. Chair, members.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Steve McDonald, managing partner of Abdu Ackman Meyer. And I'll go over some of the required communications that we have in the audit and point to just financial highlights. Our job in the audit is giving an opinion on the financial statements of the LCC. And ultimately, we issued an unmodified opinion, which is the highest level of assurance that you can have on those financial statements. So from our perspective, the report is clean. We considered the internal control of the organization helps us plan the audit. We did have one comment in our management letter on the second page related to preparing a year-end trial balance. That the way that the information is accumulated comes in many different pieces, and it has to be assembled into a trial balance at the end of the year. As you can see from the management response, there's a good compensating controls in place and monitoring process to assure that it won't be any issue, and we would agree with that management response. Let's see, as far as plan, scope, and timing of our audit, we set out objectives at the beginning and met all those objectives. And we didn't have any uncorrected or even corrected misstatements. Everything that we went through in the audit process reconciled to the internal records of the organization. We didn't have any disagreements or difficulties in executing on the audit. And management did sign our management representation letter that in the most bottom line element says that they gave us the things that we asked for and answered all the questions that we had laid out. So that's the required communications that we have from the audit perspective. The financial statements, if we just want to take one quick look at page 28 of the bound financial statements, that gives you a perspective on the revenue and expenditures that we are working with. Overall, the total revenue budget is $12 million. Expenditure budget was about $16 million. In total, the net change in fund balance was $128,000. So really, as expected, a break-even year. So things met expectations from a financial perspective. So I could take any questions that anybody might have.
Members, any questions on the financial audit? See none. Do we have a motion to approve the 2017 financial audit? Leader Winkler moves the approval of the audit. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. The motion prevails.
Thank you
both for being here.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's see. The next item on the agenda, we'll bring up Mr. Hubinger. Mr. Hubinger, welcome back.
Mr. Chair and members, the next item in your packet and on the agenda is a proposed revision to the LCC's compensatory time policy. This policy has been in place as is since 2005. We're proposing to amend it to reflect the recent actions by the House and the Senate a few years ago in terms of how employees earn compensatory time. We would propose in this policy to reflect that same policy where LCC employees earn comp time at one for one, as do employees of the House and Senate.
Representative Garofalo. Representative moves adoption of the resolution. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails. All right, next we're going to review commission and joint legislative agency biannual budgets. Mr. Hubinger, back to you.
Mr. Chair and members, the next item is to review our proposed budgets for the next biennium. Don't be intimidated. These presentations will be very brief, but each of the directors will be walking through the highlights of their budget proposals. The LCC statute requires the commission to review all of the biennial budget proposals of the legislative commissions and joint agencies, and this hearing today fulfills that requirement. The top page in your handout is a summary page that shows the general fund budgets and proposals for the next biennium at the top third, and then the other funds that make up the LCC's the joint offices budgets are shown in the bottom two-thirds. We'll be going through those briefly later. FY19 allotment should reflect the forecast base in the governor's budget. The FY20 and 21 projected obligation reflects current levels of expenditures that are projected for the next fiscal year. And in that way, they reflect current compensation and current contracts and other spending levels for program lines. These projected obligations do not include compensation increases. We will be waiting for direction from House and Senate leadership to add those to these budgets. We do show change levels in a separate in separate columns. That's for any proposed new staff or new initiatives, and they'll be discussed separately by each of the directors. The bottom two-thirds show the non-general fund budgets for LCCMR and Lasard SAMS, and for captioning for webcasting that the LCC does for the House and the Senate.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hubinger, so if you're presenting these budgets for our approval now, how does this work then with the legislative process if the legislature approves a different level of budget?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, these we're not asking for approval of these today by the LCC. I think we should consider these works in progress that show the base budgets and mostly to be amended by whatever compensation increases are provided by or approved by leadership.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hubinger?
I think we're ready to move to the individual presentations. First up would be Mr. Inman from the Revisor of Statutes.
Very good. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Miller, members, my name is Ryan Inman. I am the Revisor of Statutes. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today about our projected budget for the upcoming biennium. If you look at the second page in the LCC's packet, you will see where we currently sit. The spoiler alert is that we are largely looking at a no-change budget save for one real substantial item. I'll detail that briefly and then stand for any questions you may have. As it currently stands, we have a single database administrator that monitors the database that basically drives all of the work the legislature does. To say that it's just a database administrator is a little bit inaccurate because he's really more a database administrator plus a SQL programmer, which means he does all of the work that a DBA would typically do, but is also involved with programming required to access the database. And those are items that are involved with, say, bill drafting, the House and Senate calendars, the floor voting boards, those sorts of things all access our database. And so he is heavily involved in that work. Over the past several years, we've seen a pretty substantial increase in the amount of demand for database services. In 2012, we had two databases. We have since moved up to five. In terms of raw data, we've had an increase over the last 5 years from about 325 gigabytes of raw data to over 1.3 terabytes, so a four-fold increase. And we've also seen large increases in the web hits that are tolling the database as well. The primary reason we're asking for an additional individual to help with this work is because it raises some pretty serious security concerns. He is overwhelmed with the amount of work, and so given the current construct where we are recommended to do annual updates and quarterly patches, we're only able to do those updates on a 1 to 2 year or 2 to 3 year basis, excuse me, and then do annual patches. And so that does create a real security problem. We've been okay thus far. But I'm from my mother's school of paranoia, so we're going to ask and make sure that we try to get someone to add to that particular level of request. If we get that second individual, we should have a more stable, reliable database. We should also be able to resolve the backlog that we have seen in database projects and hopefully be able to add to the amount of service that we provide with respect to access to records in the database for the public as well.
Members, any questions for Mr. Inman? See none. Thank you very much for your presentation. Next, we'll welcome Mr. Nobles. Mr. Nobles and team.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Members of the commission, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and I just brought a couple of friends just in case things get rough. So our budget proposal is pretty simple and straightforward. We're asking for a funding level that would sustain our current staffing of 65 people, that would allow us to carry out our current mandated responsibilities. And let me just quickly remind you of what those are. We are the auditor of state government. We are responsible for auditing the state's financial statements every year. Mr. Boozy, our deputy legislative auditor for the financial audit division, is responsible for that. He also has responsibility for fulfilling a federal requirement that we conduct an independent audit of the state's use of federal funds. And then we have audit jurisdiction and responsibility throughout the executive branch, everything from the governor's office down to the Board of Cosmetology. We try to get to as many of those organizations as possible and the programs that they run. We also have audit jurisdiction and responsibility within the judicial branch and for most of the metropolitan agencies as well. So Mr. Boozy and his team stay pretty busy with that. Ms. Randall, Judy Randall, who is the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Program Evaluation Division, and I'm sure many of you know her because her division carries out the evaluations that you members ask for each year, and frankly, we're in that process right now of considering that. So in addition to that work, we have responsibility to investigate allegations of the alleged, possible, suspected misuse of public funds or misuse of private data. So that's what we do. And the money that we're asking for would allow us to continue to carry out those responsibilities. So it would be a full funding budget for our current staff to fulfill our current responsibilities. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Members, any questions? Leader Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Speaker, for turning me the button on. Mr. Nobles, the FY19 budget is substantially above the 17 and 18 actual. Is that, do you over budget and come in under typically, or is there something I'm...
The explanation for that is, Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, several things happened. First of all, we received some additional responsibilities from the legislature and some funding for that. For example, we are required to do audits, quarterly audits of the transit system from under the Metropolitan Council. We also audit managed care organizations. We also have a mandate to do certain audits, more audits than we normally would at the Department of Human Services. So some money came with those responsibilities, and that's where the increase came from.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
And advertising and communications, and I'm thinking of all the materials that we receive as legislators. How do those budgets interact? Seems to be a relatively low number for printing, and I'm thinking of the various reports you put out, and then a relatively high number for communication.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nobles.
Representative Carlson and members, the communication is actually our phone bill. It's not communicating with legislators, although we do sometimes use our phones to communicate with you. That's basically the phone bill. The printing, I would say, is a very happy story. If we had a longer-term trend line, that line has gone down significantly. We used to send our reports out to a printer to have them printed, and we now do that in-house. Because of the very fine work of some of our staff, we figured out how to print all of the reports that we provide to you in-house, and it made it a lot cheaper, and there were other advantages to that. So that's why that number is low.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Nobles and team.
Thank
you. Appreciate it. Next, we have Ms. Lincoln from the Legislative Reference Library. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great. My name is Elizabeth Lincoln, and I'm the director of the Legislative Reference Library. Thanks for the chance to speak. I won't tell you, I think you all know a lot of what we do. Our key, the most important things that we do is answer reference questions from legislators and staff. We provide customized services that maximize the use of our newspapers and magazine sources, and we provide some of the electronic resources that you and your staff use. We do some other things too. I'd be happy to talk to you about any of those things at any time. You can see in our budget that our primary cost is for staff. We currently have 14 staff in 13.25 full-time equivalent positions. We have one empty half-time position, and six of us are librarians. The budget line in everyone's cases has gone up in the last year. It's increased by about $160,000 per year. Our server costs have also gone up by about $3,000 a year, but all of our other budget lines are stable. Some costs have increased, some have decreased, but it kind of evens out. So that's all I really have to say about our budget. Do you have any questions for me?
Members, any questions? Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Ms. Lincoln. The change from the professional technical services outside vendor, you had a line item for that in 17, 18, and 19, and you're not projecting a need for that in 2021?
Ms. Lincoln?
I'm not really sure why that is.
I can answer my own question.
Okay.
Did it get moved down to the state agency professional services tech services line further down? There you didn't have anything in 17, 18, 19, and now you do in 2021.
I think so. Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, I think so. I just I'm going to have to get back to you on that. I think it got shifted. The totals are exactly the same, and so I think it just got shifted from one line to another.
Ms. Lincoln, if you could check on that and follow up with the members, we'd
that.
Appreciate that.
Yep. Yeah, it looks like you were using an outside vendor. Now you're using some internal sources to provide
that
service.
I think that's what happened, and I'm sorry I'm not able to respond to that.
Members, any other questions for Ms. Lincoln? Thank you for being here today.
Thank you very
appreciate
much.
Appreciate it. Next, we have Ms. Lincheski. From the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Miller. My name is Susan Lencheski, and I am the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. As some of you know, for instance, Senator Dames is on our commission, as is Senator Pappas. We prepare legislation and consider that legislation through the course of the session, and then during the interim prepare studies and do other work on pension and retirement issues. Our budget is, I don't think, all that different in terms of the increases in the employee compensation area. We have about a 2% overall increase in our budget. The line item that is maybe more significant in our budget is that for professional technical services outside vendor. That relates to the use of an outside actuary. We have Deloitte currently, and that contract expires on June 30th of 2019. We will then need to do an RFP and find a new actuary. We expect that those costs will go up by about 3.5%, which is why there is an increase in that line item. The FY17 actual is more typical for us in terms of use of actuary. So that is the amount that I'm looking at in terms of what will go up for FY20. That's all my prepared remarks.
Members, any questions for Ms. Lincheski? Thank you for being here today.
Great, thank you.
Mr. Hubinger. And Ms. Henry.
Mr. Chair, one general observation that I should have done at the outset regarding our budgets, at least the general fund portion, is that our joint commission budgets are the same as the House and Senate budgets for 1920 as they were for 17 and 18. So we've been operating at the same level for 4 years now, and that has caused some much tightness in our budgets and is reflected in the proposals that we have for 20 and 21. The LCC operating budget supports the staff and per diem costs for members of the LCC. There's 8 staff that are supported through this budget, and per diem and travel expenses for members of the LCC, the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, the Legislative Water Commission, and a couple of other smaller groups. Our FY 2021 just shows our current staff compensation levels, and other program lines are continued. We have a proposed change level for 20 and 21, which is the additional cost that the office will incur as a result of the redistricting process that will happen during the 21 session. Those are for temporary staff. Mr. Chair, that's all in the operating budget. The next page is what is called the LCC Other Appropriations Fiscal Agents, mostly funds that just flow through the LCC on behalf of the legislature. This is the portion of the budget where the legislature pays its dues for NCSL and CSG. Those dues have increased by about $15,000 for NCSL and CSG by $20,000 over the last few years. This budget also pays for the indirect costs. Those are charges or fees assessed by Minnesota Management and Budget for using the state budget system. Those costs are increasing somewhat because the Senate has now moving over to using the HR system for payroll for staff, but those fees are picked up in this part of the budget.
Okay. One of the change items that we're also seeking is for the Mississippi River Parkway Commission. They're looking for $97,000 in fiscal year 20, $15,000 in 21. They're asking for this funds. They had a detailed strategic plan that was done a couple years ago that went into a 15-year analysis on it, and in-depth analysis, and they're looking to fulfill those tasks that were recommended from the strategic plan that was done with federal funding. The $15,000 would be allotted to devote some resources for support resources for development of a road ambassador program that was recommended from the funding, and also to increase their engagement with strategic partners. The one-time funding they're looking for is $82,000. That would be for 3 different things. Increase to make their website more functional for visiting for visitors to look at for planning their trip, and for increasing tourism to the Great River Road area. Printing and designing a new Great River Road map, and then development of training materials and launching the ambassador program.
Mr. Chair, members, the next line is for public television. This is where the funding is provided for the contract for televising House and Senate proceedings and for the captioning of those proceedings. The funds here are also used to pay for repair costs for the hardware and software that operate that or that support that system. In the Capitol restoration process, a new broadcasting system was installed in the Capitol and the state office building. I believe that was about $12 million. The warranties on all of that equipment have expired, and we do not have a maintenance agreement. We originally got an estimate of $400,000 a year to do that. At the moment, we're paying on a pay-go. When we have a crash, we buy new equipment to pay for the component that's failed. A sink generator failed about 3 weeks ago. That was a $25,000 bill. That's to keep the broadcast working. So we're watching that budget closely. The last item that we'd highlight is the Legislative Salary Council. That's the group that was established because of the constitutional amendment in 2017. That's the council that of 16 citizens that determines salaries for legislators. There was never an appropriation pay for the per diem and member travel costs for that. We're proposing $11,000 or $10,000 a year to pay for that.
Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Leader Winkler.
Mr. Hubinger, I assume that the LCC has a carry forward, but I don't see it listed, and I wonder if you could inform me about that.
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, there is a carry forward. I believe it's got a balance of about $1.5 million. We don't show it. We don't have a budget page for that in this packet.
Mr. Chair,
Leader Winkler.
Mr. Hubinger, so the $1.5 million carry forward, is that pretty consistent over time, and you anticipate it staying the same?
Mr. Hubinger?
It's relatively stable. There are some legal costs that get picked up that are substantial changes to that balance, but other than that, it's fairly stable.
Thank you.
Senator Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hubinger, so a couple years ago when the governor vetoed our appropriations, we borrowed some money from the LCC. Has that all been paid back now?
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, yes.
Members, any other questions? Thank you both for being here. Next, we'll welcome Ms. Weber from the Legislative Budget Office.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Michelle Weber. I am with the I'm the director of the Legislative Budget Office, and the budget for the office is found in the second to the last page of the packet of information that you have before you. The Legislative Budget Office is expected to assume oversight of fiscal notes, the policies and procedures, as well as the analysis of fiscal notes prior to the submission to the legislature on September 1st of this year. In fiscal year 19, the budget for the Legislative Budget Office was $864,000, and that included some one-time funding for the costs of setting up the office as well as purchasing equipment for staff. The ongoing base for the Legislative Budget Office is $818,000 per year, and what that supports is seven staff, a total of 6.5 FTEs, a $69,000 contract between the Legislative Budget Office and Minnesota Management and Budget for use of the fiscal note tracking system, which is the technology system that supports the fiscal note process, as well as a small allocation of resources for leased costs. The change level that's presented before you would support adding an additional five staff to the office, as well as lease costs associated with locating the office in a neutral location at the 525 Park building. The current level of staffing for the office is significantly below the level of staff that would be necessary to not compromise the timeliness and quality of information being provided to the legislature. Example of this is that Minnesota Management and Budget currently has 17 individuals who are available to support the oversight and analysis of fiscal notes. And recognizing that they perform additional functions such as the forecast, the governor's budget recommendations, I'm not proposing that the Legislative Budget Office would be staffed comparable to what's currently available at Minnesota Management and Budget. But the level of staffing that can be supported in the base budget is significantly below what's necessary. In the Health and Human Services area, so far this session, there have been 441 individual fiscal notes. That's not on individual bills, but it's agencies that are providing fiscal notes. There may be bills that impact multiple agencies. And right now at MMB, there are three executive budget officers that review those fiscal notes and analyze them, as well as a team leader. Under the current model and staffing level, there would only be one individual within the Legislative Budget Office available to do that. One of the columns that's unique to this budget page that you see, that you don't see on others, is the planned column for fiscal year 19. I'm anticipating not spending the total allocation of resources, and so there would be carry forward from fiscal year 19 that could support the request in fiscal year 20 to add additional staff and for the lease costs. The carry forward that I'm anticipating would be $460,000, resulting in a request for $86,000 more in fiscal year 20, and then a request in fiscal year 21 for $665,000 over the base.
Members, any questions? Leader Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Weber, do you have a compensation comparison with, for example, House fiscal staff for similar positions in your department?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, when creating the position descriptions for the Legislative Budget Office, I had the benefit of using the fiscal analyst in the Senate and the House position descriptions, as well as the MMB executive budget officers, and look at all three of those types of positions in comparison to determine what's the level that should be proposed for the legislative budget office. So the analyst position in the legislative budget office is somewhere between, because there are differences between the House and Senate fiscal analysts, for example. The level of compensation is between that of the House, Senate, and MMB, and it's lower than the MMB executive budget officers.
Leader Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Weber, but just to be clear, the comparable position at the LBO would be higher than, for example, House fiscal analysts.
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, this is where I may need the House to speak to this. I believe they have three or four different levels of fiscal analysts. And so the starting analyst at the Legislative Budget Office in the starting salary range is slightly higher than the House's. But we do take that into consideration when we're determining the offer to make the candidates, the compensation offer.
Thank you. Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment about the office space. Where are you housed right now?
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dowd, currently we have space on loan in the basement of the state office building. So we have temporary space next to the Sergeant-at-Arms.
Representative Dowd?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just an opinion, if you will. I heard the comment of 525 Park and neutral space. I don't think the rivalry between the House and the Senate needs to rise to the level where we need to rent space off of our campus when we have space on our campus that can be used. There's plenty of room in the state office building that, frankly, is currently some of that Senate space until a new space agreement is assigned, although there's some opinions that once the Senate vacated that space that it no longer is Senate space. So I think the best way to proceed is to sign a new space agreement to fix that problem. But let's not, we're trying to get the revisor's office back from 525 Park right now. Let's not go out and rent more space when we have space sitting empty in buildings that we own right now. I mean, that is the most foolish thing I've ever heard.
Speaker Hartman.
Just another opinion from the House of Representatives is that we don't have ample space in the state office building for the Legislative Budget Office and all the existing tenants. That we do need to expand the space that's currently occupied by House Fiscal and House Research and the Revisor's Office. And so we need to find a space for the Legislative Budget Office that they fit in.
Any further discussion? Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, the LCC is occupying some Senate space now with some of their commissions at the gracious offer of the Senate back a number of years ago. And to Representative Dowd's point, it would take a new space agreement to change the uses of the Senate, the Senate space currently in the space agreement. But there is a lot of underutilized space over in the Capitol. And it seems like the right neutral space for the budget office is in the state capitol. There's a lot of room over there, and it just seemed would be a good place to have them. So just want to get that into it. If the state office building isn't big enough for the House, I certainly would be willing to have a conversation about the LBO being in the state capitol. There was a lot of conversation during the space conversations between then Speaker Dowd and myself and the governor about a lot of that unutilized space in the Capitol, about maybe moving the constitutional officers in there. There were a lot of things considered, and now the space just turned up empty. I mean, most of the third floor east wing is pretty underutilized.
Now we're having some fun. Representative Dowd.
No, we're about to have fun. I keep hearing the term neutral space as if we're at war. So my question is the House and the Senate at war in this state? Why are we using the term neutral space? I think there's plenty of room in the state office building. I helped put together the plan. There's plenty of room in this building. I'm sure there's plenty of room in the new Senate building. I just hate to see us pay rent when the whole goal of remodeling some of that space that the Senate vacated in the state office building We're right now in the process of trying to get the revisors back, revisor's office back together, reunited in the state office building. Please, let's not look at space off-site. Let's find something on-site, and don't use the word neutral unless we're really at war. If we are, let me know, because there's some things I want to do.
Well, very good discussion. I don't think we're going to resolve it here today, but we do have some things to continue to talk about. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chair, I just hope this time it doesn't turn up as cartoons in the Star Tribune.
All right. Well, thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Weber? Thank you, Ms. Weber,
for
being
here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Next, we will welcome Ms. Nash from the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Becca Nash. I'm the director of the LCCMR, the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. As many of you know, the LCCMR is a 17-member commission made up of 5 senators, 5 representatives, and 7 citizens. The LCCMR makes recommendations to the legislature on how funds from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund are spent on environmental projects around the state. They then provide oversight on these funds once appropriated. Funding for LCCMR's operations comes from the trust fund, which is a permanent fund in the state treasury, and any unspent funds are canceled and returned to the corpus at the end of the biennium. The majority of the LCCMR's work is conducted outside the legislative session. We have approximately 20 meetings a year. Therefore, after personnel, the largest portion of our budget is per diem and travel costs for our members. These are seen on the employee costs and budget travel lines. Our proposed budget for the 2021 biennium is a no-change budget, with the exception of 2 items. One is an additional FTE that would bring us to a complement of 5. And then you'll see that there's a set aside in the other operating costs line. There's approximately $84,000 a year. These are one-time funds set aside for strategic planning and a potential special project related to our records management system. Strategic planning is required by law to be conducted every 6 years. We're in our 6th year, so that's why you see it here. Expenditure of these funds would require approval by the LCCMR's executive committee. By law, our administrative costs must not exceed 4% of the amount available for spending from the trust fund in a given biennium. The proposed budget represents 1%.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. I just have a question about the second line from the bottom, other operating costs. Fiscal year 17 and 18, you had 66 and then blank, and then 2019 budget is 47,000. Can you explain that? Or maybe I missed it in your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, the $47,000 on the fiscal year 19 was a set-aside to begin hiring on that extra FTE that was set aside in the prior biennium. And then the 85 and 83 for 20 and 21 is that strategic planning cost and special project that I mentioned during the presentation.
Very good. Thank you. Members, any questions? Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Nash, what... I'm just curious, the portion of the proceeds from the lottery that flow into the trust fund, how much money was that in the most recent fiscal year?
Ms. Nash?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, that was about $35 million. That's 40% of their annual proceeds.
And Senator Bach?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Nash, and until what year? I know constitutionally we extended that. And what year does that expire and then all the money would flow into the general fund?
Ms. Nash?
Mr. Chair and members, 2025.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? No. Ms. Nash, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And next we have Mr. Johnson from the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. Mr. Johnson, welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I'm Mark Johnson, Executive Director for the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. Thank you for letting me present to you. We are on the last page, the last side of the last page of your handout. So. The Outdoor Heritage Council, you're all should be real familiar with it. It's been around for 10 years now, basically. But in a nutshell, the Outdoor Heritage Council makes recommendations to the legislature for appropriations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. We have a staff of 4 individuals that work for the council, follow the bills, and also work with the program managers through all the proposals or the appropriations that are open. The budget in front of you, you can see the last few years, FY 17, 18, 19, actuals from 17 and 18 in our budget currently for 19 and moving forward in 20 and 21. We've been actually under budget the last in FY 17 and 18 in large respect because there were a couple of projects the council was kind of anticipating that did not, we didn't need to do them, so they didn't happen. One was looking, and those are both entered into now. The council saw fit to move forward with those, so we entered into RFPs for those. One was actually looking at outcomes and measuring outcomes from the projects and their that happen across the state. And then the other was actually website updating that's coming up. Where our software for the website, unfortunately, is entering the end of its life, and it has to be redone. So those RFPs are moving forward. Those will actually mean that in FY19 as well as 20 and 21, we're going to be quite close to budget. Still along with that, we were able to trim back our budgets for 20 and 21. Other than that, employee compensation is really the only thing that continues to move slowly upwards. So if you have any questions, I'm sure we're happy to answer them.
Members, any questions for Mr. Johnson? Don't see any. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, next on the agenda is the review of ethnic council biannual budgets. And if Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and members, just to do a brief introduction here, this is a separate section of the budgets for the three state ethnic councils. As I mentioned earlier, when the councils were restructured in 2015 as a way to improve the relationship with the legislature, language was added that requires, one, that the LCC appoint the directors, but second, that the LCC review their proposed budgets, and that is what is being done here. The first testifier is David Maeda. He's not a staff. He's actually the chair of the of that council.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the commission. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is David Maeda. As Mr. Hubinger just mentioned, I am the chair of the council. I'm agent Pacific Minnesotans. To my left is our research director, Anjali Mishra Cameron, and we are actually filling in for the face you're probably used to seeing here, Sia Herr, who's our executive director, but is not feeling well today, and it does take two of us to fill Sia's shoes. So we're here to present our budget proposal. There are actually two in your packet, and I will discuss why there are two. One of them is just simply an increase to keep our current operating in place. And then the second is a proposal, which I hope you will consider, that would add a full-time one FTE to our agency. Just so you know, we're one of three ethnic councils in the state. We are at an exciting point in our juncture. This is the first time since I've been on the board for 5 years, and this is the first time we've had a full board and are fully staffed. We adopted a strategic plan in 2018 that we have been busy implementing. Four of the goals of that strategic plan were that Minnesota's Asian Pacific communities benefit from our work, Minnesota Asian Pacific communities trust our council, the council is an agent of change in state government, and that the council leads dynamically and effectively. And we are doing that by our publishing original research and community issue reports, recommending and advising to you as well as executive branch, being present in many of our community and our community events, and then facilitating and coordinating community and government interactions. We had our API day at the Capitol a week from yesterday, and I thought it went very well. We had a very nice turnout and participation. For our budget request, the reason we are asking for one FTE, we currently have four. We have the executive director, we have our research director, we have a legislative liaison, and then we have an office manager. One of the challenges in our communities, we are the fastest growing community in the state, and we are also the most diverse community in the state. I come from a Japanese American family. Our family now has five generations that have grown up in America. We have many in our state that are from refugee communities, and they, of course, have faced a vastly different experience than I've experienced growing up in Minnesota. And our immigrant communities have faced different challenges than our refugee communities. So we are a very diverse community. And one of the challenges, and I'll admit that this is something that's bothered me as the chair of the board, is I think our communication efforts often are need improvement, and it's challenging because as we try to communicate what's going on in government to different groups that don't quite understand or come from very different backgrounds and viewpoints on government, it's very hard for us to communicate effectively. And that's why we're asking for a communications specialist. I think it's not only challenging to communicate government jargon to members of our community, but it's difficult to communicate across different languages. And so this person really would lead our efforts to communicate better with our constituents. And with that, I would stand for any questions.
Members, any questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony Thank this you. Afternoon. Next, we'll welcome representatives from the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. Good afternoon and welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Justin Terrell. I'm the Executive Director of the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. And I appreciate the opportunity to discuss our budget for next year, or for the next biennium. And you'll notice that we have an operating budget of around $407,000 with a change increase of around $274,000 per year. So that's $275,000 in the second year for a total of $549,000 for the biennium. That money will be used, it's a 67% increase. It'll be used for to increase staff. So currently we have three point five staff. Myself, the outreach coordinator, legislative coordinator, and our office manager. The legislative coordinator is currently a 0.5, which we plan to increase to a full FTE, as well as add an additional research position. And we'd like to also add a cultural liaison and someone to lead on communications. So that's like a quick overview of the budget. And I'll just say that our work, as you know, we represent, according to the state demographer, over 425,000 Minnesotans across the state. This is everybody from the 4,000 Liberians who stand to be deported on or lose status on Sunday evening, to the Somali farmers and Sudanese workers in Austin, Minnesota. And in order to make sure that they benefit from and engage fully in the legislative process, we are trying to expand our team to be able to make sure that we can fulfill our statute duties.
Members, any questions? Thank you very much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
And next, we will welcome representatives from the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. Good afternoon. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Henry Jimenez.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rosa Tok, and I am one of the three legislative directors for the council.
Welcome.
Actually, I paused because I'm used to say I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs, but I believe as of today, it's actually Rosa Tok who would be the interim executive director, and so it's a bittersweet moment for me. I'm moving on from state government, but never moving on from the state of Minnesota. I love this place, and I really appreciate the opportunity the LCC gave to me four sessions ago. And I hope that you have seen a big difference in the Latino Affairs Council. One thing that I take pride in is that we restructure the councils to make sure that we can present a trusted source of information to all of you. I don't care if you are Republican, Democrat, Independent, or our community. I take pride that we were providing the same exact information to everyone that asked for the information, and I hope that you were able to see that in the last four sessions or so, and I believe that Rosa will be able to actually do it better than myself. So, but we're here to talk about the budget, right? So I want to make sure you notice that we're asking for two additional staff, communication specialists, and an office assistant, which would be about $160,000 each year. And operational adjustments would be $24,000 in fiscal year 20 and $30,000 fiscal year 21. I want to address the operational adjustments first. When we were first, or when I was first appointed, the staff that we classifications, I don't believe reflected what the work of our team did. I believe that the classifications that we inherited were entry-level positions. They were very low-paying positions, and we were expecting them to do legislative research, community engagement, communications, social media. I mean, you name it, we four people were doing that. They just happened to also have graduate-level degrees, and I believe that our team together spoke like three to four languages, yet they were getting paid significantly less than folks who were just entering the state at a different department. And so I just want to make that clear to folks. I've always been pretty straightforward to all of you, and since I'm leaving, I'm just going to be even more straightforward. I strongly believe that the ethnic councils have a strong strong teams, and the information that they're providing to you is one of the utmost important. The demographics are changing, and you can take it the way you want to take it. But I see it as a business decision. I really do. I think of, like, the decisions that you're making, how are they going to impact everybody in the state? And they cost money. Every single decision you make costs money. And I can assure you that if the ethnic councils could provide you information, and we want to, would save the state a lot of money or create economic opportunities for everybody in the state. And I look forward to having more of that opportunity later on, but it's an investment that you're making. That right now, the ethnic, at least the Latino Affairs Council, we have four FTEs. We do everything. The moment I finish talking to you, I still have to figure out how I'm going to communicate that to my board, communicate it to my community, communicate it to other legislators that might have an interest in how this meeting went. Not to mention, I still have to walk over to the office and answer probably 17 missed calls, and I'm not kidding, because I don't have an office assistant. I am the executive director. I'm the office person. I'm the communications person. I'm the community engagement person, and so is Rosa, and so is Violeta, and so forth, right? We only have four. So my request would be to make us even more effective and efficient by helping us bring in a communication specialist and office assistant. That you would see a tremendous growth from our agency if you haven't already next year. I also just have to say that in closing, I want to make sure that this is on the record. My team member, Justin Terrell, has already transformed that council. Sia Herr, I don't think has ever taken a sick day in the four sessions that I've been here. I just want to make that clear. I don't think any of us work less than 40 hours, and I know none of you do either. I get that. But I just want to make sure you understand how committed the ethnic councils are to you and to our state, and how important it is for all of us to work together for the betterment of our state. With that said, I'm leaving state government. I strongly encourage you to look at everybody's salaries, including the executive directors, and compare them to other executive directors. Not even close. Not even close in how much they're getting paid, and not even close in how much they are working. With that said, it's been an honor to be part of state government. I'm still here for a couple more weeks because for some reason I love this state and I can't just quit. But I look forward to still connect to you in a different way. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate your commitment to the state and certainly best wishes on your next endeavor.
Yep, I appreciate that. And for the record, I became a father here, and it's part of the reason why I'm moving on. I want to spend more time with my kids, with Javier and Lucia and my wife, Jenny. And that's part of the retention that we need to figure out here at the state. I look forward to maybe one or two questions. I'd love getting questions. I look forward to questions from you. So please give me a question.
Speaker Hartman.
Thank you. I am wondering, with regard to your outreach to the community, about what's going on at the legislature, do you have a Facebook page in Spanish or Portuguese or other languages? Do you have e-news updates that you send, email updates in other languages to let folks know what's going on at the legislature? Or do you just not really have the staff for that at this point?
Mr. Jimenez.
I think if you looked at our communication, Mr. Chair, Madam Speaker, we do it in both languages. And I think most people think I can just Google translate this stuff. And I could tell you that it's 2.5 times when you are talking about two languages. We communicate with our community in English and Spanish. I want to also let you know that every summer we go out to Greater Minnesota, intentionally have listening sessions. So when I hear all of you going out to Greater Minnesota, that's great. We spend so much time preparing so that we can provide a report every year about what we heard in the areas that we are focusing on, so that you also have recommendations within that report that you can then utilize as legislative initiatives.
Members, any other questions?
Come on, one more.
Thank you. Thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
And we have a couple other things that we want to try to cover here, Mr. Hubinger, on the harassment policies.
Mr. Chair and members, the Senate yesterday adopted a new sexual harassment policy. The House did something similar about 10 months ago. The LCC will be reviewing its current policy and revising it to reflect and work and integrate with the Senate and House policies. The LCC policy currently provides that it covers House, Senate, and LCC. And we would like to ask for a motion so that we staff be directed to add some note to that policy so that staff and members are clear that the LCC policy applies to the LCC entities and that the House and Senate policies apply to them. There's going to need to be some coordination around this at some point, and that conversation I think will happen during the interim. But we're suggesting a motion that would provide that LCC staff be instructed to consult with appropriate Senate and House staff to include a note on the LCC policy on sexual harassment to reflect that the Senate and the House of Representatives have adopted their own policies.
All right, someone willing to make that motion? Speaker Hortman makes that motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
And before we open it up for some very brief public testimony, I just want to make a comment to all the directors and staff of all the commissions and the joint legislative agencies on behalf of the entire committee. Thank you for all the good work that you all do on behalf of us as legislators, more importantly, on behalf of the people in the state of Minnesota. So thank you for that. Senator Pappas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hubinger. I just had a question about the State Investment Board. I thought that there was going to be something you were bringing before us regarding the State Investment Board or the director's salary, or was there some issue that?
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, the State Board of Investment has its own compensation plan that mm-hmm. affects about 25 staff. That is a plan that would be considered by the Subcommittee on Employee Relations that you created earlier in the meeting.
Okay.
Be
so it doesn't come to the full committee yet?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Are there any members of the public that wish to testify? Good afternoon. Welcome to the commission. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. And I think we have this room booked in 5 minutes for another committee, right? 5 minutes? Yeah. Okay, so very brief.
Thank you, Chair and LCC Commission and members. My name is Rick Keller. I officially represent the people with print disabilities and twice exceptional unofficially. And Minnesota Statute 120B15 or in the House File 1380, line 1.18. Regarding this committee, I have reviewed these documents. I'd like to express some feedback, and I'm glad you allow the civic engagement. For instance, under joint legislation offers budgets. When cells are not marked and people are using readers, they don't know that that cell's marked purposely. That's feedback for Greg with the LCC. Regarding the last three documents from the council, the three councils, those documents are not tagged properly on the bottom of those pages, such as page PDF page 3 on the first one, starting from the top, PDF page 2 and PDF page 2 again. We all want individuals that are here in America to speak English. It's my suggestion that if those individuals would look at Social Security Administration.gov, they have a plug in there called Browse Aloud that highlights and reads the words out loud as they're read. And it does not target blind and visually impaired. It does target learning disability, dyslexia, and then English is a second language. Again, we want everybody proficient in oral English. I don't think these bills are adequate enough. I do agree with the Latinos that they need another specialist. As I review their mandated reports as well as the others, they're not fully accessible based on Minnesota Statute 16E.03 Subdivision 9, which is about web content accessibility guidelines of 508. I suggested before in the House, there's a guideline for accessibility and usability of information technology standards from Minute, dated 4/17/2018. Greg has it specifically on page 9. It says, manually test criteria in accuracy assessing accessibility by simulating the user experience. The Adobe Reader reads out loud and a free download, and there's a reason why they read out loud. And it said everybody can access the printed word effectively so they can engage and enjoy the services here at the Minnesota Legislature. You think about this as you move ahead. Even though there is a working group, last Senate file 1727 in 1962, it is missing four components, I believe. Timely transparency. There's no public porthole. Perhaps you could use the librarian porthole, provide public input for that. And then turn the word may into must if you're going to use minute to provide feedback at the legislature. Currently, Mary Kiffmeyer introduced the bill 901, which gives you more expertise on accessibility, but it's very lacking here. And there is a porthole, which is only a survey that goes to minute, but once again, the legislature is exempt from the accessibility law. The working group will be successful in 2 years, yet still in committee for pensions, they're still introducing XXX files, which are truly a disservice based on the three Heller handouts you'll find out on the Data Practice Commission that's tracking this process. I think to consider a rule in the Senate and the House, such as Rule 59 in the Senate, to stop that process, at least so when they consider these bills, that they're only in the meetings and they don't get passed on the floor, because a bill doesn't get fully accessible until it gets a number. The legislature worked hard on some TAM dollars for a minute. That's on the Data Practice Commission. That struck through another nine language will read out loud.
And Mr. Heller, we're going to start losing members, so if you can please wrap it up in another minute or so, that'd be okay.
Another one is one example is that is your proposed resolutions that has struck through another language. Only a bot and Adobe Reader will do that. However, those that can say it struck through another line in a portable document, which you can do. Again, that's a choice thing, and it's one thing to not know it and do it, but now we're doing it and still doing it. So thank you again for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Thank you for keeping us on our toes as legislators and for your commitment to improving accessibility here.
It's
in the
correct.
State
and one thing about thank you, everybody, is about what we can apply and do. Thank you again.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with him. I think he's right, and I think we can do a better job making our computer systems more accessible. And I know prior Speaker Thiessen agreed with him as well, and I think it's something we can strive to do a better job of.
Excellent. Any other comments? Are there any other members of the public that wish to testify? Seeing none, the Legislative Coordinating Commission subcommittee or commission or just commission, we are adjourned.